we can't do a show this week because I have to go buy a new laptop because this one crashed. It crashed. It just blue screened. Oh, time to buy a new one. Just throw it on the pile of still turned on blue screen laptops in the backyard. I'm Zach.
I'm Riff.
And I'm Kevin.
And it's another episode of Video Games Hot Talk. How are you guys doing?
Doing good.
Yeah.
I have a suggestion. I think we don't record this podcast and we go play another game of Risk Legacy.
Huh. That's oddly familiar, that suggestion.
We could bring it in here on this table and play
we
while
could play
the
while we're doing that.
Yeah.
Oh, man, we could live stream a game of Risk Legacy.
I'm sure that everyone would love that.
We don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah, love all the spoilers.
We don't want to spoil that thing where the mole men come and...
Are we ruining it for ourselves by playing it?
Yeah. Yes, if we had never played that first game, then it would be a shining jewel in our imagination.
Well, it would be, right? I mean, this is my thing about endings, right? Yeah. Like, it's better if you don't know. This game would be better. In my mind, before we started playing Risk Legacy, it was the best board game ever conceived of.
I am much more excited about it now that we have played a couple games.
Mm-hmm. That's because you have no imagination.
Yeah.
I'm very excited to play some games on a fresh board with some other people that I know would love to see what happens.
Yeah, I feel like...
Our girlfriends are angry because we played without
it
them.
It is unfortunate that it's 3 to 5 players, so we can't all have our girlfriends play at the same time.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, one of us could not play.
Yeah, I guess.
Or, yeah. I mean, 3 of the girls could team up to be one person. Am I right?
Like, are you saying they're all so thin that they weigh the same as one person, all three together?
Yeah.
That was really kind of you.
It was a good compliment. How's it going, guys?
It's going good.
Good.
We played a lot of Risk Legacy. Fucking rules. A lot. We played 3 games.
Yeah.
But a lot of stuff happened.
Yeah. Especially this most recent game. We opened up all kinds of boxes.
Mind-blowing packets.
Envelopes.
Yeah. I feel like playing it 3-player has caused the packets not to be as spaced out as they would be in a 5-player game.
Well, I feel like making it my goal in the last 2 games to open one of the packets caused the packets to get open faster.
I could have stopped it if I had known. Yeah, no, I don't know that I would have. I don't know that I would have changed my
I was
strategy.
Real sad. I was going to be real sad if you had really cock-blocked me the way that it looked like you were going to.
If you, I did not realize that you got all of somebody's cards when you defeated them utterly. I think that might
have
changed.
Then you would have taken them and then you would have done the thing that I was going to do. That would have made me even sadder. Because not only are you a cock blocker, you block my cock and then use it to bang the girl that I wanted to bang.
You cut
it off of me, and that's what I'm saying. Like, that's the most humiliating thing to happen at the club, right?
Do you think there's a porn movie called Chitty Chitty Gang Bang?
Wow. If not, I think you need to go into porn.
Probably. You don't think that Ian Fleming's family would sue them?
You might just have them assassinated.
Oh yeah, and then you just wouldn't know. It'd be like that Stephen King, the guy that ran over Stephen King.
Mm.
It's like, oh no, he died of natural causes, not a curse. I read an entire Stephen King book in between the last podcast and this one.
I heard that it was placed between some other books.
The new Dark Tower?
It was like Dark Tower 4.5.
Is it like flashbacks to young Roland?
It is about, I don't know, 10 pages of stuff in the continuity of the story. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of that, there's a flashback. And in the middle of that, there's like a...
In the middle of the flashback, there's a flashback?
In the middle of the flashback, there's half the book is the character telling a story to another character, and the narration switches to that story.
So the concept of it being between books 4 and 5 is really kind of meaningless?
It could have happened more or less anywhere, I guess.
Mm. That's very Mary Shelley.
I've heard he's planning to go back and rewrite the last trilogy of the series or whatever.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know.
To make it not
it
suck.
Basically. Huh. It may just be rumor, but there could definitely stand to be some rewriting in those last couple.
Just replace them with better books.
Yeah.
That would work.
Yep.
You could just read every other word and find the puzzle that he's hidden in them.
No, I thought you were going to say he should just rewrite the last 3 books of the trilogy, and the 5th one would just be the 3rd one backwards, and the 6th one would be the 2nd one backwards, and the 1st...
So it's a palindrome.
Yeah, just write a palindrome. That'd be awesome.
No, and then the last one is Atlas Shrugged, which is weird. I don't know where that fits in. So yeah, Risk Legacy, reading a book.
Very good.
Kevin went on a trip.
I did. I played an Urg. It's like an Arg, except for it happens in the real world.
And isn't as fun.
Yeah, it was kind of a fucking clusterfuck.
You were looking for an apartment.
Yeah, so I went to Chicago to look for an apartment because my girlfriend has to go there for work for a year. And
what kind of work is there for a battery drawer in Chicago?
Well, I mean, there's all kinds of batteries all over the place. There's double A's, there's triple A's, C's and D's.
I thought Chicago was all wind powered.
Watch batteries. Are you 9 volts?
Are you Bubba from Forrest Gump, except you're enthusiastic about batteries and shrimp?
Well, I mean, battery drawer. Yeah, so we over the course of the weekend, we saw 15 different apartments.
We should also store the salt in that drawer.
Why?
So it can be the
salt and battery.
Salt and battery drawer. All right, we'll take a break while you go put some salt in that drawer, and then that joke will be good.
Jesus.
Sorry, what were you saying?
Yeah, so we, like, halfway through, like, mid-afternoon on Saturday, or early afternoon on Saturday, we found a place that we were excited enough about that we decided to put in an application, which involved getting $2,200 in certified funds made out to this, like, management company, which on a Saturday afternoon is kind of a pain in the ass.
What is a certified fund?
So a money order or a cashier's check, for example, are two kinds of certified funds. There might be other forms, but those are the two that we knew
of.
Pieces
of eight.
Bullion. Yeah.
They would not take cash, which we found out later.
That's not certified.
Which, ridiculous, right? It should be. It is legal tender for all debts, public and private. It says so on it.
Yeah, but this isn't a debt. You don't owe them money.
I mean, we owed it to them in order to apply. Anyway, we went to one of those, like, just totally sketchy check cashing places, went inside, waited in line after all of these...
people ruining their lives. Well, people whose lives were already ruined, further ruining them by being trapped in an unfair
system. They were all like Latin of some persuasion. Like, every single one of them was
don't
like
be racist.
I'm not being racist. I'm just telling you what happened.
Benedictine
so they were all
monks.
Jesu Domine.
Yeah. I was like, Jesus Christ. I felt bad going in because I hate these places on principle.
I felt bad going in there because I hate minorities.
I hate these places in general because I feel like they literally just make poor people poorer. It's like, it's all a bunch of services that cost you extra money so that you can do things like pay your bills, which shouldn't cost you any extra money. It's just a fucking nightmare.
Scam, yeah.
Yeah, it's super obnoxious. Anyway, went in there and got to the front of the line and was like, can we get a money order? Will you take like a debit card or something like that? And she's like, no, we need cash. And I was like, if I had this much cash, do you think I would be coming to you guys? Yeah. So then I had to call my bank.
Basically you said, look, lady, do I look like I belong here? This is a place for Hispanics and other poor people.
I did not say that even a little bit. So then I had to call my bank and convince them to increase my ATM withdrawal limit to $3,000, which they did. They were very friendly.
Just for like a day, right?
Yeah, is that a for a single day. Yeah, it's awesome. It's like super cool. If you need cash in a hurry, you have a really cool bank and a bunch of money in an account already, I guess.
Yeah, so basically, here's how to get ahead in the world. Already come
start
from
with
a
bunch
of privilege.
Money. Yeah. But then I had to like drive. So then it was like 1:30 when we decided to get the place. It was like a little after 2 by the point that we had found out we couldn't get a money order without cash. And so then the apartment place that we had to put in the application closes at 4. My girlfriend said that we could get money orders at her bank branch, which is like a Chase bank or whatever, which closes at 3, which is on the other side of Chicago. So then, like, I then had to do like a GTA, you know, Vice City kind of thing where I was like driving around
you
town.
Beat up a hooker.
I beat up a hooker.
Steal $2,200 and buy a money order.
I drove off a bunch of ramped trucks that happened to be just backed up into the right places to get across parks.
You jumped over Lake Michigan.
Yeah. And we got to the bank with like 15 minutes to spare. I took out a bunch of money from the ATM, which was kind of like some sort of weird mini game. Because I thought when I got there and like went to the ATM that the most I could take out at a time was $200, and I was all set to be extremely pissed because I was like, I do not want to do this 11 fucking times, because it was sort of a convoluted process to get to that, to the menu at the first place. But it turns out you can type in numbers. But then even then it was $800 a time, so I had to do three different transactions. Got the money, went to the bank place, got the money orders, which you had to buy three of, mm-hmm. again, because they would only go up to $1,000 at a time. Super annoying. And then we got over to the place and put in the application, and apparently we got approved. So I got a copy of the lease in the mail today. It was like 18 pages of minute text.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. And it seems like these people are real easy to deal with.
Yeah.
That bodes well for your future landlord-tenant relations.
Yep.
Is it a cool apartment?
It's pretty cool. It's the garden level, which is a euphemistic way of saying the basement.
Okay.
It's like half underground and half not. So it's like the like 0.5th level.
Wow. So that's like,
and the first floor. So it's like it's a two story apartment.
Huh. So to me, the advantage of living in a city is being able to stand at a window and show like a whole lot of people your balls at the same time.
If there happen to be a lot of people in front of the first story window.
Yeah, but who looks down there? I mean, nobody looks down there. You might see somebody's balls. The thing about being up really high in a building is you stand by the window,
yeah.
You pull your pants down.
Yeah.
First of all, you wave your dick and go while you're doing it.
Yeah.
But a lot of people are seeing your balls without even knowing it, because a lot of people look up at that building and they don't know.
Yeah.
Their visual fidelity is not quite there to be able to pick out your balls, but you know they're seeing them.
Sure.
I mean, this is what, like, I can't imagine any other reason anybody would spend any time in a city.
So now I know a lot more about your time in New York City.
Yeah.
Greenwich Village.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Hmm. That was it.
Interesting.
I was like, how many windows does this apartment have? Do they face every direction? No, just one? That's okay.
You did spend a lot of time on the roof.
Oh, yeah, I did. Hmm. The roof had a wall that was, like, about up to chest level. I know, it was really disappointing. I had to stand up on the edge, real precarious-like. It's like, check it out! If I can show my balls here, I can show them anywhere.
You could have done a handstand.
Oh.
Oh, good call. Oh,
good thinking. That would have been a lot safer. Oh, well. Worked out okay.
We're in Ukrainian Village. We're around the corner, like a good 3-minute walk from a bar with good cocktails.
Okay.
Already made a friend at the bar.
Nice.
Yeah. His name's Doug.
Okay. Good job. You'll have to introduce us
yeah.
if I ever come visit you.
Yeah.
Which I won't, because I hate flying, especially into Chicago.
Yeah, but you might drive.
I might drive. Yeah, I might be doing a crazy video games hot dog road trip.
That'd be awesome.
It's just a road trip where I show everybody my balls.
and then at the end, we bail you out.
Yeah, sure.
Or each stop along the way.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, that might need to happen more than once. Yeah, we just have a caravan.
Of trucks filled with bail money.
Yeah. We need to get one of those money bailers. But that would... I wonder what would happen if you just had a pickup truck.
Bail.
If you just got like your entire life savings in $1 bills in a bale. You just put it in a hay baler. And then just drove a pickup truck around with a bale of $1. Because... like
super impractical.
On the one,
to steal.
Yeah, on the one hand, it's like, oh, look, a whole bunch of free money. But on the other hand, it's like, well,
it's like you'd have to like stealing a bike with no wheels. It's like, yeah, I guess I could.
Eh. Ah, boy.
Yeah. So that was my real life adventure.
Blocks. Well, good. But you got an apartment, and everything is great.
Hopefully.
Is Doug watching it for you until you get there?
No, it does. Our first month doesn't. The other people hadn't moved out yet. They had like a giant sheepdog and a weird flat-faced cat. Yeah, I don't
Turns
know.
Out one of the rooms belonged to them too, and they're taking that with them.
No, that would be awkward.
Was that Richard Pryor movie? I think it might have just been called Moving, where they bought this house and they got there and the. All of these things that the owner had joked about. Oh, we're taking that with us. Like, they took the fireplace with them. They took the roof with them. I mean, the roof. Sorry, Casey Wiederman.
Are you allowed to do that?
I don't think so. I mean, this was a movie. This was a comedy movie starring Richard Pryor.
It wasn't a documentary.
I think JoJo Dancer, Your Life is Calling was semi-autobiographical, but still not a documentary. Talk about the time Richard Pryor caught his hair on fire filming a Pepsi commercial.
Huh.
Everybody should fucking buy and play Risk Legacy.
Yep.
That's what I'm thinking about now.
Should we kind of actually describe it?
I think we've talked about it before. It's a board game that changes as you play it. Like, the winner gets to make some changes to the board. The losers get to make some subtler changes.
Stickers and pens and cards get torn up.
Yeah, each time you play the game, somebody signs the freaking board. It's cool.
You change. You draw stuff on the board sometimes.
Yeah.
Cock and balls.
Yeah.
You've found Cock and Balls Island. Anyway, it's pretty good. Speaking of games, you guys been playing any video games?
Yeah, played a fair amount of video games. I played a little bit more Legend of Grimrock last night. Got down to the last level and was thoroughly surprised by the boss, which then kicked my ass, and then I turned the game off because I wasn't expecting to suddenly encounter the boss and wasn't prepared to deal with that.
I think I haven't played since a week ago when I had gotten down to like level 7 or 8 or something.
Hmm.
Are there more tile sets?
Yeah, like the last two levels have another new tile set.
Is it like in Contra, where it turns out it's an alien?
No, it's all like...
you're inside its lungs?
It's more like metal panels and mechanically.
Hmm.
I'm about halfway through a replay of Super Brothers Sword and Sorcery.
Really?
So, yeah, it came out Retina style for the iPad 3.
Okay.
So
I kind of want to play that on Steam, now that you can play it on Steam.
Oh, like on a computer?
Yeah.
How would that work? Because so many of the puzzles were touch-based.
Probably mouse is my guess.
Interesting.
You're the one that keeps saying it's going to be trivial to port our computer game to the iPad.
Sure.
Be trivial to port back, too. I don't know. Does it use any weird multi-touch stuff? Maybe you have to get a second mouse.
The main thing I played was Fez.
Okay.
So I played all the way through it, got all 64 cubes.
So that's 32 cubes and 32 anti-cubes?
Yeah. 32 cubes of any combination of the two types will get you the first ending, and then there's a second ending when you have all 64 cubes.
Does the game tell you where the anti-cubes are?
No. They are... I think for the...
Because I found that first one by such accident that I'm like...
I think for the most part it is...
Is it the same methodology to find each one too?
No, not necessarily. Okay. I mean, there's different like codes and things that you will find that may resolve to a series of button presses you input.
Okay.
And when you get one right, an anti-cube appears.
Just wherever you are.
They may depend on the room.
Okay.
I have not extensively tested that.
Interesting.
But yeah, got through it. It is really good. I only needed to look up information on the internet twice. Once for, I don't want to really spoiler anything, but there's an area that can be called the Red Sewer Tower, which is a platform jumping son of a bitch. Like all the platforming in Fez is really kind, and you respawn really quickly, and it automatically checkpoints you to like the last piece of solid ground
when you were standing on.
Yeah, and things like that. So it's really nice, but not this one.
Huh.
It's a long series of vertical platforming against a timer, and the only checkpoint is at the beginning.
Wow!
And it made me so angry. But I remembered Zach had mentioned that he had heard that upon getting the first ending to the game, that there's a fly code that you can use. So I went and looked up what that was.
It's this thing that Jeff Goldblum types into his transport machine.
Transforms into a fly.
And that just, you just zip right up?
Yeah, I flew up it.
Interesting.
And I don't at all feel bad about it, because it is the worst bullshit platforming.
Well, I mean, why
experience.
Would you feel bad about that? It's not like cheating,
no.
Right? Is it like, it's like the same thing that made everybody mad about the end level of Trine?
Yeah, I'm not a gambling guy, but I would put money on the idea that that particular bit of platforming is why that fly code exists.
Huh.
And the other thing I looked up was there's a thing that you could call it a security question.
Okay.
There's like a riddle that you have to solve. And I figured out the answer to the riddle and knew that had to be the correct answer because it was just such a perfect answer, you know, but I could not figure out how to input the answer such that it would recognize it, and nothing that I tried worked. And so I ended up looking that up. And on reflection, I don't think I would have figured that out.
Interesting.
I might have figured out like a step toward it, but I even haven't gotten that far. I would have not figured out how to do it in that particular way. I don't want to spoil anything.
Huh.
But yeah, so I got those two things. And there was a couple of things that messed me up for a while. There's a sort of code that you'll see four times in the game that is really fucked up and confusing if the batteries are low on your controller.
Yeah, you mentioned that, and yeah. I didn't understand what that meant.
I can tell you more about it later on the
radio. Is it like a thing that blinks the home key?
Or does it vibrate or something?
It vibrates.
Yeah, okay.
It vibrates.
Wow, so this is going to be a tough game to port.
If the control... Yeah, I don't think it can be ported because so many of...
The codes are Xbox controller...
Xbox controller specific, yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Huh.
And then there was another... What was the other thing I wanted to mention? There is the other puzzle that I was stuck on for a long, long time was because... my interpretation of how the system of numbers worked turned out to be incorrect.
Oh.
And so I...
Yeah,
I've
only translated enough, but I haven't done any numbers
so
yet.
Yeah, so I translated the numbers. I was, you know, I thought I knew what the numbers were, except that my interpretation of it meant that one of the clues that is posted on one of the walls that you find was therefore a typo or somehow incorrect. And I... You know, being a guy who works in the video game industry, the notion that somehow a typo might have slipped in was not so foreign to me that I thought it would be impossible.
Right.
So I just kind of accepted that. And because of that, my numbers were wrong. So I couldn't solve this puzzle. So eventually I was like, all right, well, maybe that wasn't a typo. Maybe I need to rethink this and solve for the numbers correctly. And then was sad because my version was cooler.
Huh,
and I think the actual system of numbers is kind of dumb.
Okay.
but yeah, other than that, it was really fun. It's a great game. I don't like platforming, but I enjoyed it. Ooh, I did it pretty much all over like Friday and the weekend, so probably not more than 10 hours.
Okay.
Maybe.
I need to dig into it.
Does that include time spent decoding and...
Yeah. Well, probably not including time spent not
thinking
sitting
about
in front of the TV. There's also a timed section that I ended up just leaving it up there while the time ticked away.
Do I need a computer next to me while I play this?
No.
Okay.
You will want a notepad and a pencil.
Okay.
And I took pictures that helped me greatly in decoding stuff.
Yeah, you will probably want your phone so you can take photographs of the screen.
Okay.
Or a camera.
No.
Since that, you know, a phone is not a thing that necessarily
the
takes
iPad worked really nicely for me for that because I could take
high resolution.
Yeah, because I could take pictures of the screen and then import those pictures into like Sketchbook Pro or whatever it's called and use the stylus to like draw the translations right onto the photo.
I don't know that the rotational aspect of some of the characters was interesting, causing the ambiguities. Like there's some ambiguities in characters and stuff. And
it seemed frustrating to me looking at the screen on the TV that you were playing it on. Cause I was like, if those details are meaningful, that really sucks.
If you play it on a small TV.
Yeah.
You probably do need a reasonable size and reasonable resolution TV.
Yeah, which I have one that's okay. But, yep.
Pretty good.
Is that it?
Yep.
What about you, Kevin?
Because I was playing that ERG, I have not played a bunch of games. So besides a handful of Risk Legacy games, the only video game I played was Tiny Zasters, which is...
that's cool.
Yeah, it was a Ludum Dare 23 game by Volute. It was kind of interesting. I didn't play it for super long. I basically beat it on the easy level, then I beat it on the medium level, and then I played it until I beat it on the hard level, and then I was like, okay, I feel like I'm sort of done with this. But what I basically did was just develop some strategies to play it quickly so that the disasters that were happening did not really affect me. So the way that the game works is it's sort of a grid of tiles, randomly generated terrain, basically. It's all flat, but there's different kinds of terrain. There's like deserts.
Everything's like a mountain, a desert, water, a forest, or grassland.
Plains, yeah. And so then you click on one, and you can either like build a workshop there, which just sort of returns resources to you over, slowly over time. You can build a city in plains.
Oh, is this the thing I saw you playing that one time? Okay.
You can build a city in plains, and then you can build a shrine in most places. And the point of the game is to build a shrine up to level 3 or 4. So you can upgrade your cities and your workshops and your shrines and stuff like that. You start with a certain number of resources, and you collect more resources, some of which you don't have at all to begin with. Like there's like light bulbs are like the hardest ones to get, and those are only generated by like higher level cities. And there's like generic crafting ones, which are also generated, I think, by cities.
You have to build Edisons.
Yeah, Edisons, whatever. And there's also...
And they only work in the Menlo Park biome.
There's mana, which you can use to generate like new terrain types if you're like out of one, but I basically never used spells.
I forgot that you could do that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so like there are all these systems. Like, so basically what I felt like the game was if you played it fast enough, you could kind of ignore the disasters because they changed the board, but it's pretty random, so you really can't prepare for it a lot. Hmm. Then there's the whole spell thing, which I guess if you were screwed and you're like, I cannot make any water anymore, like I don't have enough water to like progress, then I guess you could cast the water spell to make some like water places or whatever. But it does it in a weird way where it like disrupts all of the rest of your shit, and you can actually lose a bunch of stuff. The disasters and casting spells can like cause you to lose a bunch of stuff. You basically don't want to have anything around the edges because they can just get pushed off the board. Hmm. So,
I mean, this sounds like some bullshit that somebody only spent like a couple days on.
Yeah. You know, so like in 2 days, it was pretty impressive.
No, I enjoyed. I mean, I played it. I played it once on normal, beat it, and that was it. I was like, all right.
Yeah. Cool. It's the ideas. That. The ideas are pretty cool. I liked it. It was like, you know, just like collecting the resources was interesting. Learning about the systems was kind of interesting. I feel like the fact that you can just ignore one or two of the major systems in the game seems like it's not pulling their own weight. But I don't know how you would necessarily rebalance it. I kind of wish the games were longer, maybe a bigger surface to work on or something like that would be kind of interesting. Because you can increase a bunch of the numbers and the sort of size of the board, and I think it would become more interesting.
Well, with a bigger board, it's a lot less likely that things are going to get pushed off of the board.
Right, but not less likely for the stuff that just flips 25% of all forests to desert or whatever.
Okay.
Right, so those kinds of disasters would be more dangerous and meaningful or whatever. So yeah, I don't know. It was definitely interesting, worth playing. The other thing is, I guess I've watched my girlfriend continue to play that Dragonvale game or whatever it's called.
Yeah, she's still at that.
She's still doing it, and it has some awesome long term goals. So like you can you breed these dragons, you make dragon eggs, or whatever, you raise them up. You can feed them, so you have to like build machine like structures that make food or treats, I guess, as they're called in the game. And then you feed your dragons to level them up, and they cap out at level 10. But then you can buy a structure which lets you, if you get 50 dragons of a particular type to level 10, you unlock the ability to level these dragons to level 15. And then if you get 50 dragons to level 15, you unlock the ability to get dragons to level 20. that particular type of dragon. So you have to do that for every kind of dragon that the game
and
has these towers for.
What's the ultimate goal here? I
mean, there's no ultimate goal.
Just having a bunch of really high level dragons.
High level dragons give you more money the way that you get income in the game is
your dragons go and roll somebody in an alley.
they basically just over time they generate cash, and then they live in little habitats. The habitats have a cap on how much cash that they can provide for you. So, like, with a higher level dragon, it fills up faster, so you have to come back more often.
Is this ridiculous in terms of a real overtime game? Like,
it's like a farm. It's like farm.
Okay, so you like log out for a day and come back, and your dragons have some money.
Yes.
Okay.
But if you had logged in, you know, every hour over the course of that day, you would have gotten a lot more money.
Yeah. Okay, never mind.
Yeah. No, it is not a game. Like, it is very much in that bullshit tick-based Farmville school of games.
Like Ben Edlund wrote it.
Yeah. It's cute. The dragons are pretty cute.
Mm. She was real excited about some new kind of
She got dragon. A rare dragon. She got a moon dragon.
Okay.
Does it just have a big ass?
No, although that would be great. Certain combos of dragons produce, there are like 40 or 50 different breeds of dragon or something. It's insane. They've gone nuts.
So you need like 2,000 dragons to get all of your dragons to max level?
You don't have to do them all at once. You can like get a dragon to level 10 and then sell it.
Hmm. Okay.
Because I don't know that you could have, it would be really hard to have that many dragons.
Who do you sell it to?
I don't know.
Butcher.
The kitten eating demon.
The treat factory. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting to see. Like she's gotten kind of invested in it.
Has she given them any money yet?
I don't know.
Has she given them all of your money yet?
She does not have access to all of my money.
Oh, only some of it, huh?
So, yeah.
That's it?
Yeah, that's it. What about you?
I wrote it down in the other room, and I did not sneak out to get it. I think it is called Drakensang. Okay. Drakensang, I believe is the name of it. It was a thing that was linked to, that's just like a, it's just like a multiplayer, it's sort of a Diablo MMO. Diablo MMO.
Okay.
Which I was really surprised by the sort of quality of it. But it was just completely soulless. So I was just like, I don't really want to go kill 10 of these things to get 10 of these things to give to this lady in this town.
Because nothing has souls.
Yeah. I was thinking, though, about Diablo and Torchlight and how all of the people who are posting on the internet about how much more excited they are about Torchlight 2, every time any news comes out about Diablo 3... there's a bunch of people in the comments that are like,
shit,
oh, that's just the nail in that coffin. Can't wait till Torchlight 2 comes out. Well, that's it. I'm not buying Diablo 3. Another copy of Torchlight 2. Oh, this is the last straw. I just pre-ordered 4 copies of Torchlight 2. And I don't get it. Like, yeah. Torchlight was okay. I got into Torchlight and played it a little bit when it came out and everybody was playing it. But, like... it just doesn't have any soul. Like that I think is what I realize is the difference between Torchlight and Diablo is that Torchlight just doesn't have any soul.
Like, is this a quality that you could elaborate on?
I don't think so.
Okay. That's I'm curious what that means.
I mean, if you have to ask, you don't know.
Apparently.
Torchlight, I mean, this might not be the case for Torchlight 2, but I felt like there is a world and a story that I was participating in the Diablo games that I didn't feel with Torchlight.
Torchlight was very much just the same. It was not only the same level over and over again, it was the same room over and over again.
Especially once you beat the first dungeon and unlock the second dungeon, which was extremely obvious in the fact that although it was giving you quests, they were just randomly generated quests of, you know, pick up the object from table A on level D6 plus 4.
Yeah.
It just wasn't compelling in the least.
Yeah, I mean, and Diablo 2 only had a handful of quests, but they were, like, for real, and they were all different, and they were, like...
And they had different runes and features that were specific to it.
And they alternated environments. I feel like they didn't even necessarily have that much more variety than Torchlight, but they didn't just constantly show you the same thing over and over and over again the way Torchlight did.
Did Torchlight have cutscenes?
No. Hmm. Yes? No? I don't know.
I don't think so.
I mean, Diablo barely had cutscenes.
Are you kidding?
It had a cutscene at the beginning and it had a cutscene at the end.
Every chapter in Diablo 2 had a cutscene.
Oh. Yeah, okay. Okay, I was thinking of
that
Diablo.
Really punctuated the story.
I was thinking
a lot.
Diablo 1.
Yeah, Diablo 1 also, might have only had the...
I mean, remember when we were in there in the part that we were supposed to be in? And they had this bulletin board, like a cork board is the word that I was searching for, where they were like, all right, this is
the color scheme for each act of Diablo 3.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm. And it was just a bunch of pictures of environments where they had just chosen the color palette for mm-hmm. each one.
Like they did with Warcraft, World of Warcraft.
Yeah, yep. And it was like, all right, that makes a lot of sense because this, like you will go into a new act and it will feel very different mm-hmm. because, I mean, I feel like Torchlight almost had like that Bastion syndrome where
everything was too colorful.
Everything was too colorful. Yeah, like everything was too all over the place. And so nothing was differentiated. Like everything was the same, like Jackson Pollock style, everything level at the same time. That it's like, oh, now I'm in a swamp and I can tell because there's like a slightly higher concentration of pointy green things or whatever. Mm. And I think there was an alligator. but yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe Torchlight 2 will be different. But I don't know if people are just on this Torchlight 2 bandwagon because...
As a reaction?
Yeah, because it's going perpendicular to the Blizzard.
Yeah, it's just red team, blue team. It's people have decided which faction they want to belong to and are sniping at the other one.
And Torchlight's the cool underdog, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't even get to the bottom of the dungeon in Torchlight playing it because it was just like, you know, I finish a level and I just don't want to finish another. Like, I don't want to start another one because it's exactly the same.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. Like, Diablo 1 felt more like that than Diablo 2 did, I guess. But Diablo 1 gave you, like, you know, what, 4 or 5 levels, and then it switched tile sets and you did 4 or 5 more. But Diablo 2, I feel like, just did a really good job of differentiating.
Yeah, extremely different environments.
You did spend some time running around on just like sub areas
in those environments.
But then you go to some sub areas and you go to some different stuff. And like, you know, it's like the second one got all deserty, but then there'd be like a tower that you went into, and then there'd be like a bug hive that you went into, and just, I don't know. I mean, I remember the jungle being really boring in Act 3.
Yeah.
But
I mean, the temples and tombs that you find in the dungeon are awesome.
The jungle was annoying too because of all those stupid pygmies. If you were a melee class,
nice
like
to meet you.
A lot of running around. So I played some of that Drakensang game that I wasn't talking about just then, and then I played what did I play? I downloaded The Seventh Guest on iOS was free yesterday, and so I played that for about 5 minutes.
It's like $5. I was gonna go download it today, and it's back up to $5.
Dumb man, it's not even worth 50 cents. It's so bad.
Huh?
It's so like it. It seems like it's like well regarded because there wasn't really anything else like that.
Like named some of the tropes of bad game design. Like there's the like soup can puzzles where you unlock a door by arranging a collection of irrelevant objects into an irrelevant pattern to unlock a door for no good reason.
Weird.
Is called that because of the soup can puzzle in Seventh Guest.
I didn't even get a chance to find out how bad a lot of the puzzles were because the presentation of the puzzles is so fucking terrible. Mm. Like, I got to the first one, and I remember playing this before. The first puzzle is like, oh, you find a cake, and you have to, like, divide the cake into an equal number of pieces that are the same and have the same number of skulls and tombstones on them. But it's not clear whether they have to be the same shape or not. And I don't know if they... And just selecting the pieces, like clicking... just the interface of playing this fucking game was so miserable that I was just like, all right, well, I tried once. There's no way to go back. There's like... So much of the way that you move around the world of The Seventh Guest is context clues based on what your cursor turns into when you're mousing over something. And the cursor's only there when you're touching the screen. And so it's like sort of like bad port of bad game. And damn, free was too much for that game.
It took away some of your life.
Yeah. I played The Walking Dead game, the first episode of The Walking Dead. You guys should play it. It's really good.
I was kind of holding out to see if it came out on iOS.
Oh, huh.
Do you think it will?
I
have the Sim and Max games come out?
Yeah.
They have for iOS. Huh.
I haven't actually done any research or looked to see if there are any rumors about it coming out on iOS. I guess I should do that.
It's weird. It's not like a traditional point-and-click adventure. Really, it's very talky. It's real conversation driven, and it's, you know, it's like branching storyline. I'm guessing there's no good way for it to end. just saying that right up front.
I mean, is that a given? Given that there's no way for any story to end well.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But it branches, and you make choices. I'm really curious what they're gonna do with it. I have a lot of faith in Sean Vanneman and Jake Rodgen.
Yeah,
like they know what makes video games good.
Yeah,
and that was nice, honestly, to be playing that and thinking, all right, well, I trust the people that made this. Like, there isn't going to be any just bullshit in here. There's not going to be anything that I trust the people who designed these things.
How much control do they have over the final product, though?
Like, I don't know.
Like, they're working at a studio, and there's other people involved, right?
But I mean, it's
they're not programming it.
No, but they're the first two names that you see, right? Okay. So I mean, I don't have a real good sense. But it does some stuff. You can turn this off, but I don't know why you would. It tells you, like, there are all these conversation things that have an impact on later in the game, and it tells you every time the game state changes as a result of something that you say or do. It just pops up, and you will say something to somebody, and it will say,
before you say it or after you say it?
No, after you've said it. Hmm. All of the, maybe not all, but a lot of the conversation options are on a timer, so you have to
decide.
This is more like, all right, what am I doing? And it'll be like, Larry will remember that you trusted him. Or whatever. Okay. And it's just like tells you when somebody's attitude changes, and it tells you, and I don't know how much of an impact that actually has.
That's,
I kind of don't want to look into it. I kind of want to.
Is it a game that you could go back and play a different way?
I think so.
And have like two different save states that carry forward into their later games?
Yeah, there are multiple save slots. I kind of don't want to. I kind of want to wait for the rest of the episodes to come out. I actually am looking forward to them. Like when I played the Back to the Future, the first episode, I was like, yeah, okay. And when the second one came out, I downloaded it and played it for about 10 minutes, and I was like, yeah, I'm done with this. Like, I just don't. I got stuck on one of the two puzzles in it and had to look on the internet because the sort of modern idiom that they have for the point-and-click adventure sequence is a little weird because it's not like rooms that you're moving between. There are states of the game that are kind of like rooms, and there was a thing that I needed to get to like break the window of this car without making a bunch of noise and alerting the zombies, and it was just the only way that you could see the thing that you needed was if you happened to be like looking around a particular corner, which I thought was just a transitional state to move to a different room, but that angle on the position that you were on was sort of its own room, just a room in like an abstract sense, where, oh, okay, there's this thing on the ground that you can pick up that you could only see if you were doing this one thing that seemed really transitional. So I didn't feel super bad about looking that up, but I was like, all right, I either need to look this up or I'm going to turn this off and go to bed. I played the whole thing in one sitting. It's probably like 2 hours.
Huh.
But it's good. You have to make some hard choices, but it doesn't make you feel like, you know, do you want to save these kittens or rape them? You know, it's like,
right.
It's like,
I mean, who wouldn't choose to rape the kittens?
Exactly. You can only save, like, both of these people are getting attacked by zombies at the same time, and you can only save one. What are you going to do? And so, right. And it wasn't so much like, oh, well, this one guy is clearly an asshole and this one guy is clearly the good answer to save. It's like, wow, fuck, do I like do the thing that you would probably do in this situation, or do you do the pragmatic thing that would render you most likely to survive?
So there's like somebody who's like really good against zombies who you'd want to have on your team, and then there's a little kid, yeah,
right, and it's like a it's like a retarded kid too. So you like, and you, so it's super weird, and it gives you like 5 seconds to make the decision.
Oh,
like it's
Jesus.
Like
and if you
like,
what happens if you don't make a decision?
I don't know what happens if you don't make a decision.
If they both die?
That'd be awesome.
So there's even a third outcome?
I'm really curious how they're going to... Like, I'm really curious as to what points it collapses back down, regardless of the choices that you've made. Because otherwise, the amount of work that they have to do, like the amount of content that they have to generate for each successive episode increases. Yeah.
But wouldn't that be cooler if they just did more work?
Well, it would be, but I don't think that's their plan. I mean, they have got like a month, right? They're working on the second one.
Oh, right.
And
I mean, maybe they're compartmentalized such that events are independent of the characters that are available.
Mm-hmm.
So it just keeps track of who you have left on your team. And then
at the end, it tells you there's like the five biggest branching points. It tells you like you and 75% of other people helped this guy instead of this guy. And it was, I was in like the majority on every single one of them. I was like, huh, well, now I don't feel like I,
that's super interesting.
I don't feel like I have a personality.
There's only there's only two other people that have played the game.
So, okay. This is better. No, it's really good. It's really
I've
good.
Been, I've can, been hearing a lot of really good things
I can
all over the
I
place.
I can wholeheartedly recommend it.
Awesome.
I mean, it's,
yeah.
Yeah. The, you know, there are some things where it feels like there's a little bit of point-and-click adventure-y stuff that's kind of shoehorned in. You know, there's like... Yeah, I don't know. There's some weird things where you can. There's a part of it where you have to. This has got to just be a joke, I guess. There is a woman trying to turn a radio on, and this woman you later find out is a radio reporter. She's like a radio journalist, and she can't figure out how to turn the radio on. And so you can like pick it up and flip it over and realize that there aren't any batteries in it. And then you have to go find some batteries and put the batteries in it. And no, you give her the batteries. And then she's like, it's still not working. And you have to pick it up again and turn the batteries around the right way. To
wow.
I don't want to like spoil this puzzle, but like, what, that was just like a weird puzzle. Like, it was like more like just a thing where they're like trying to make fun of this girl.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Is this trying to tell you that she's real stupid? So later when it comes time to save her or somebody else, that you don't save her because you know that she'll never be able to put the batteries in the stun gun that you need to kill some zombies that are going to kill you. But it, I don't know, you know, it's easy to write a story that makes it like a branching story that makes it so all of your decisions are always the right thing to do, right? I don't know if it's possible for you to lose this. I don't know if you can get killed. So it's like whichever guy you say, you know, whichever guy you help instead of doing the thing that pisses him off, like the guy that you pissed off tries to fuck you over at the end, and then the guy that you helped saves you, unless you switched, in which case those two guys switch. But I'm really curious, but I don't want to ruin it for myself, yeah. Right? I don't want to dig too deep until I've actually played out.
And you don't want to like stick your fingers in and
version of the story.
Try each option.
I don't.
Yeah.
No, I just want to do what. Also, a lot of the conversation options are just silence, and it tells you in the beginning like silence is always an option.
Wow.
And so you can just be like, I'm just like, God, done talk.
Is that the default if you take too long to choose?
I don't know. I have yet to take too long to choose in anything.
Super interesting. Yeah, now you got my curiosity peaked.
Pretty good. There's a character in it who leaves after the first episode and who is a character that you recognize from the TV show, which is, and he's like, I got to go to Atlanta and help the guy from Love Actually. That's what he says. It's weird.
Have you read the comic books or watched the show at all?
I have watched the first season of the show, but I have not read the comic books.
Okay. I'm the other way around. I've read most of the comic books, depending on how many new ones have come out since I stopped, but I haven't watched the show.
I'm the other way around on the imaginary plane, and I have not seen either.
And I also played this super weird-ass game that is weird. It's called A Valley Without Wind.
Okay.
I don't really understand how to describe this.
Isn't that a Studio Ghibli cartoon?
I don't know. So it's a 2D platformer that is all procedurally generated, and there's a bunch of crafting and a whole bunch of systems in it, and it is visually really crazy, and it is really inadequately explained.
Okay.
And there's a lot going on in it, but it is kind of like...
Inexplicable?
Yeah, it is kind of like just wandering around the mind of a madman. It's
sweet.
I want to play some more of it because I want to understand it. But so one of the things that happens is as soon as you run the demo version of the game, it pops up a dialogue box that's like, enter a license key to purchase. And then there are three blank buttons at the bottom of it. And I'm like, huh, okay, well, I guess I'll hit the one on the right. That's probably cancel. And then it gives you start out and you're like picking a dude out of some dudes. And I guess once a dude dies, you have to pick a different dude. And apparently you can unlock some more dudes as it goes by. And apparently you eventually get to a point where you like start a little settlement. And then that opens up like a world map where you can go to different places. But the art is kind of terrible.
Huh.
It's just, it's really, really, it is simultaneously like chaotic and boring, and it's really hard to tell what anything is, and it's Yeah, I don't know. It there is definitely something there. Like, it's like the video game equivalent of, like, what was that movie? Bellflower?
Yeah.
That we watched?
Yeah.
Which was like, ah, man, like, this is not good, but, like, there is something going on. You go into
it's
this
very nostalgic somehow.
You go into a dungeon, but it's just like a house, and then in the dungeon, you're in things like living room number 4, and then that has doors to bedroom number 6, bedroom number 3, hallway number 2, and you go through those doors into different little areas.
Weird.
And then they're all just like, oh, so bedroom number 6 has a door and a single chair in it. But then, like, one of them has a treasure chest that gives you some, like, ability to shoot lightning.
This reminds me of that expanding universe directory scheme thing that you linked to.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right, yeah. That what was that called?
Oh, I don't remember.
Ah, shit.
I don't remember either.
I wish that we knew what the name of that was. I'm going to mark this so that I can look that thing up and
edit it in.
Yeah, me telling people what that's called. Fuck.
It's called Nested, and it is on the web at orteil.-net.org.
It's pretty great.
Yeah, also, did you ever play that that Jason Rohrer game where you can go inside of everything?
Yeah.
Inside of Starfield Sky?
Yeah.
That was interesting.
I have played, like, 2 minutes of it. I'm kind of curious about it. I bought it, but I have not played it.
It does. That is also pretty inadequately explained. Because you can, like, go inside a power-up
and then keep going in
and make it better.
Yeah.
Or go inside an enemy.
And then you can go inside an enemy inside the power-up. And then you can go inside an enemy inside the enemy inside the power-up.
Yeah.
Power-up inside the enemy inside the enemy inside the
power-up. Anyway, that's really nothing like A Valley Without Wind. Okay. But it was similarly confusing. Some stuff that I read led me to believe that this started out as a top-down isometric thing that then they changed to a platformer.
Weird. But without changing any of the art, so that's why it's all fucked up.
I don't know. Super weird. It's super weird, and it scares me a lot. Oh, and also, I wanted to tell this story about a thing that happened to me at 7-Eleven today. I don't usually lament the state of the youth of today, but this was, I got a cup of coffee. I went and got myself a cup of coffee, and I took it up to the counter, and it was $1.73, and I gave him $2, and he handed me back 12 cents in change, and I looked up at him. He was like, that was 23, wasn't it? And I was just like, eh, whatever. He handed me another dime. So, yeah. Kevin, what's in the news?
Let's see here. This week, Portal announced that they were going to be releasing their design tools for PC and Mac on May 8th.
Sort of alligator.
That video was so awesome, as always.
Oh, I did not watch the video.
Oh, I posted it on Minimum Safe Distance.
Oh, yeah?
Available online at Minimum Safe Distance.
Apparently, the level editing tools are in-engine. It is not an external application. You just load up Portal and you can you build stuff in the game.
And it all looks like the videos, like the recruitment cartoon videos.
Oh, yeah?
That's the art style of
that's
it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's super cool. Skyrim, the first downloadable content was kind of announced. It's going to be called Dawnguard. And it's available this summer.
I thought it was Dawnguard. I only heard about it.
D-A-W-N.
Disappointed.
Sorry, man. Yeah, it's going to be on the Xbox 360 or whatever.
You must protect this dish soap at all costs. What was your enemy in that arcade game? Bubbles. Like ants and spiders and razor blades. It was like...
There was somebody who released this past week what they claimed was the first MMO using HTML5. Mm-hmm. And then other people were like, well, what about this proof of concept MMO that somebody already made? They're like, well, this is a real MMO. This is not a proof of concept one. But you're a bunch of bugs. And it did not look all that interesting.
Huh.
Let's see here. Draw something. Apparently, their peak users was on the day that Zynga bought them, and they have just been on a downward trend ever since. And some people were saying that it was just like they were just lucky. And I'm wondering if there's a bit more of a causal relationship there where Zynga bought them and a bunch of people were like, oh, fuck this. I don't want to play a game by Zynga. I wonder if there's enough of that anti-Zynga sentiment.
I doubt it. I think that's only in the kind of assholes that we listen to and talk
to. So Instagram's users went down the day that Facebook bought them as well and have been on a downward trend since as well, from what I've read. So I'm wondering, is there this like backlash against situations like also a bunch of these articles were talking about how Draw Something's users dropped from like at a peak of 15 million daily active users to 11 million using some weird metrics because they're just using like Facebook daily active users and not everybody has like ties their accounts to Facebook or whatever.
Here's a question. Did Zynga immediately release an update to Draw Something that you had to download if you wanted to keep playing it?
You can't do something that fast through the Apple Store, at least. It takes several weeks to get approved.
Through the Apple Store. You have to go down there.
iTunes.
Look at the different iPods.
iTunes App Store. So yeah, like it was announced. There was an update that day, but it was unrelated because they had you have to submit it like a week or two in advance for it to come out. So yeah, I don't know what the story is, but like all of these articles were talking about like doom and gloom about how, you know, if Zynga hadn't bought them, that they would have already been out of money by now, but they still have like 11 million active users that are just have, you know, those are just the people that have their Facebook accounts tied to it. And if those people are giving them any money at all, then they're doing just fine. They're still in the top 10 of paid apps on the iTunes App Store. So like there's a bunch of like haters out there that are jumping on any opportunity to say that something that Zynga did was stupid.
And nobody knows anything about anything.
Yeah. I mean, like not especially having real us. Numbers. It's interesting to see what's going on out in the world. And then this is, I don't know how interesting this will be to everybody else, but Richard Lemarchand is leaving Naughty Dog after 8 years. He's he was the lead designer behind all the Uncharted games.
He's the guy that did that attention talk that you went to that you really liked.
Yeah, so he's leaving.
He's the guy that built that puzzle box that summons the Cenobites to the physical realm.
Yeah, him too. Mm. And he's leaving Naughty Dog to go to teach at the School of Cinematic Arts at USC. But he gave like a really awesome talk at GDC, and I was like, wow, you know, if this guy was a professor, I would totally take classes from him. And now he's going to going to be teaching at USC.
You're gonna move to?
I'm not.
South Carolina.
Southern California. Yeah, so it's interesting. So like, I think they finished Uncharted 3, which got all kinds of praise for being super awesome or whatever. And I think he was like,
I heard that they had really good water.
They did have apparently really good water effects because there were like 12 different talks at GDC about waves and tsunamis and particle effects on water and like...
Wet t-shirts.
Yep, wet t-shirts. There was a whole talk on wet t-shirts. No.
It was just projected onto wet t-shirts.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I think we figured out the halftime show for KOL.
File that one away.
Halftime show. Was that it?
Yeah, I think that's roughly it.
Cool news. So this week's assignment was Kid Icarus for the NES.
Two. No, there's no two.
Kid Icarus 2.
Yeah.
Boogaloo.
Yeah, man. Mm. Kevin's the only one that finished it.
Oh, you didn't finish it, Riff?
No, the 3DS eShop version.
Oh, right. I keep forgetting you were playing it on the
3DS.
Save
states, yeah. So fuck I had that, to play man. Through it hardcore style. I got as far as very
close.
You
mean you were naked, right?
Yeah. How do you play video games?
Did you...
I got very nearly to the end of level 1-3, but very nearly is
a far cry from...
Yeah, it might as well have been the very beginning of 1-3.
Did you, on the 3DS E version or whatever, did they still just give you a code that you would then have to write down and enter again?
No, it apparently the original, like the Japanese version was on the Famicom disk system, which had actual disks that it could save files to.
Okay.
And so this used that screen. It had like 3 save slots.
Oh, so then if you died, you could start over from that beginning of that level or something?
Yeah. Yeah. If you died, you went back to the beginning of whatever screen it was.
Were they using the same system where if you had to continue or if you died, you got a worse ending? I wonder.
I don't know.
If they're using the save state one.
Was
There's a there was a pretty distinct difference between the Japanese and the American version in terms of the endings that you could get. You could not get the American version had a super great ending that you could not get in the Japanese version. And instead, the Japanese version had a really bad ending that you got if you fucked up a lot.
It turns out the pit is a girl.
It turns out the pit is a, one of those nose, speck noses.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
He was an implant
really?
All along.
In the Japanese version, if you got the worst ending, which is like not having any of this stuff and you died a bunch of times and had to continue, you turn into a speck nose. Huh.
Yeah, what basically happened to me was I got to... Like, okay, if I play this a couple more times, I can probably beat level 1-3. And then I went and looked at a fact to see if there was anything important I was missing. And it turned out that what I was missing was that I should have been spending a lot of extra time grinding out hearts and XP through the last two stages. So I was kind of irrevocably fucked at that point anyway.
Well, the game just would have been much, much harder, which it was already really hard.
Yeah. So that's kind of where it all fell apart.
I feel like the game has a bunch of interesting stuff going on, right? Like,
I feel like it tried a bunch of things. Like, I don't remember what the actual connection was between it and Metroid, but the boxes were very similar, and they came out around the same time, and I think they might have used the same, like, chipset or something. Mm. I read something about it. There was some technical similarity between the two of them. And it seems like the games that were coming out around that time really started sort of defining genres, right? And this one just took some risks that didn't pay off.
It was a weird combination of different games, right? Because it is a scrolling platformer, both up and sideways.
But you can't free roam.
Right. So no free roaming there. But then it becomes a free roaming sort of screen based dungeon exploration
game.
That was where
I quit. I got to the second fortress and I was like, you know what? I just don't want to deal with this shit. Those fortresses were so unfun that like there wasn't any payoff for exploring them. Like it's like, okay, first of all, hey, we're gonna take away all your power ups. Sure. There you go, buddy. Have fun in here.
That was annoying.
And then there was nothing worth buying in any of the shops ever. And there were those eggplant assholes that all they did was made it so you had to go all the way back to something to get cured, and you might as well have just turned the fucking game off. There's a place that you, I think, basically couldn't avoid going to where you heal all your hit points, which is great. But the critical path through those levels was so circuitous and so easy to fuck up, and there were so many just, like, weird one-way rooms or one-way paths through rooms that it was just, like... I don't know, man. I hated those things. Even with a map, it was just like, fuck, I don't want to do this.
I had kind of the opposite feeling. I enjoyed them. When I started wandering around and seeing that, like, these rooms were designed in such a way that there were a bunch of one-way paths, I was like, oh, okay, this is kind of interesting. You can sort of see how you're, like, what you're supposed to do when you come into this room from the other side, because you know that this is a one-way trip. Like, in particular, there was one place where you dropped off a ladder and you had to immediately push to the side, or you were just going to fall back to the part where you couldn't make any progress.
And all of the rooms have fucking respawning enemies. And a lot of the shit with the televisions that are dropping the snakes out.
The pots? Televisions?
They're televisions. Because if they were pots, the snakes would fall out the bottom. But the snakes appear in front of them because they're coming out of a television screen. It's like they show you a video of a snake, and then
somehow
there's also an unlimited supply of that mix of the pink and blue chemicals from that one episode of Amazing Stories that cause anything in a photograph to become real.
Aren't you thinking of Weird Science?
No. Amazing Stories was the one where there were the two chemicals. One was like a pastel pink, and one of them was a pastel blue. And if you mixed them up and then poured them on a photograph, the thing in the photograph would come to life.
Have you seen Weird Science?
Yes.
Okay. Where they also had things come to life?
Not by pouring pink and blue pastel chemicals.
All right.
Kevin, they're chemicals. They had computers in Weird Science, not chemicals.
Okay.
Also, I would remember if this had Bill Pullman in it.
Okay.
Bill Pullman? Bill Pax. Bill Pullman. I can tell them apart, I just can't tell their names apart.
Did you end up playing it along with the Nintendo Power article?
Yeah, did you find that article?
Because RetroMags.com has just available for free download every issue of Nintendo Power in in a CBZ format up to like everything before the year 2000.
What is CBZ?
CBZ is Cock and Balls Zip.
Yeah, it's a Zip, but it's like comic book Zip. It's comic book readers use it.
Okay.
I ended up translating them into PDFs for my iPad anyway. But by hand.
You had the Rosetta Stone. Yeah. There's a Cock and Balls on one side and PDF on the
yeah,
other.
Yeah, it's like a big sheet of graph paper and you have to fill in the appropriate boxes. But I couldn't find a Kid Icarus article.
Huh. Maybe there wasn't one.
Yeah.
Maybe I actually
there had to have been a fucking Kid Icarus.
I think Kid Icarus came out before the first issue of Nintendo Power, and it never got its own guide.
That's possible. No, in fact, actually, that's pretty likely.
When was the first issue of
issue
Nintendo
Power? The first issue of Nintendo Power was like in 88, yeah. I think.
Okay, and this came out in 87.
It was Super Nintendo Brothers 2. The first episode of Nintendo Power was Super Nintendo Brothers 2.
Issue 2 had a Counselor Corner's guide to how to always get all of the pots in the treasure rooms.
Okay.
Because
I remember seeing something about Kid Icarus in one of those Nintendo Powers.
That was all I found.
Man, I had some copies of the Nintendo Fun Club newsletter, and then I loaned them to this dude, and then he killed himself. So
you never got them back.
This is a sad story because I lost my copies of the Nintendo Fun Club newsletter.
Well, I mean, maybe
also that guy's kids don't have a dad anymore.
Maybe he unlocked like the secret world, earth-shattering knowledge contained within them. If you had kept them,
you might have committed suicide. Yeah, jeez.
Was that an Amazing Stories or one of the like new Twilight Zones?
No, this was a real thing that happened that I just told you about.
Where there was a phrase that you could say to somebody and it would make them go crazy. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
And like somebody finally got like on the radio.
Mm.
And, like that was how the episode
ended. There's a
Monty
Python sketch like that.
No.
There's Slouching Towards Bedlam. Spoiler alert. Everybody should also download and play Slouching Towards Bedlam.
Yeah.
It's a text adventure. It's an IF. I think you probably have to be familiar with IFs to really get it, to really get what's good about it, to understand it. You have to be at least as smart as us. How hard is that? Jeez. I don't know, man. I gave up on Kid Icarus, and I felt remiss, but I looked. I had a map in front of me of that fucking fortress, and I was just like, you know what? I don't want to. Like, this is just a chore. I would like to play. Maybe what I should have done is started putting in passwords to play
later
the sections that weren't the fortresses.
It really rewarded careful, slow play.
Yeah.
Which is kind of strange. Like, if you are very careful and you just kill everything and collect the stars,
the enemies,
the hearts and stuff like that, it is easier and you have enough resources to buy everything and you have enough like skill points to level up quickly. It's strange.
The enemies are hard, but they're fair.
Yeah.
We talked about that, right? Like the patterns are just unpredictable enough that it's not a cakewalk to kill everything, but like it's just tough. It's a tough game.
It gets easier, ironically. If you have been playing slowly, like by the beginning of the third world, I basically had all the power-ups, and I just sort of walked through the last quarter of the game, last third of the game, with just not, like, it just wasn't hard at all. It took me, like, 3 or 4 hours to get from the beginning to there, and then, like, an hour to finish it after that. The final boss is trivial in comparison to the rest of the game. The final level is just a different game than you have been playing up to that point entirely.
Yeah, it's suddenly, like,
Gradius. Yeah. I was like it's not nearly as much fun as the rest of the game in terms of, like, the platforming was actually kind of cool. There were a couple of interesting, like the wrapping around from right to left is interesting.
Yeah, that was kind of novel.
You know, like there's just,
except that it was like, it was kind of bullshitty because it's like you couldn't shoot.
You're right.
Through there,
but enemies, like, and you could
you'd
walk through.
Run into like you'd run into enemies that you couldn't see sometimes.
Okay.
Because there was a little bit of space off the edge,
right,
that you occupied, and yeah, it's weird.
I do not think it was a bad game. I think it could have used some design tweaks. So the very first room that you encounter is a skill up room, but there is no way for you to have enough of this invisible skill attribute that lets you level up when you get there. So I didn't realize that when I first got there. And I was like, huh, so this is an empty room. This must be a tutorial to tell you that the rooms lock. You only, like, the rooms are all one use only.
See, I had thought that
not
maybe,
all of them are, though, are they?
The ones in the fortresses aren't, but all the ones in the platforming sections
are. Well,
there
aren't, like, rooms. There aren't
one-off
rooms.
But they're, like, shops that you can keep going back and forth into in the fortress.
Okay.
Like, in most of the rooms are, like, shops of some kind.
I thought that maybe what it was that was the room that you went into to pick up your arrows in some previous iteration of the game.
I could see that.
And then they decided to start you with them. And then,
that's thinking about it very much like a designer.
Yeah.
Right.
But who knows? I mean, that's...
It could have been anything.
Because, I mean, it's potentially of use.
I mean,
it's a way for you to level up on your second playthrough.
Sure.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like, because you... There is a thing in the manual. There's, like, a Q&A in the back of the manual. And it was like, oh, most powerful god, how do I become worthy of your boon of strength? And it's like, how many enemies have you killed? How many rooms have you visited? How many items have you collected? How many times have you gotten hurt? In all of these, you will find the answer. Yeah.
Hmm. And it's shooting an arrow causes your skill to go down. Yeah. Taking damage causes your skill to go down. There's one other thing. Oh, shooting one of the pots in one of the treasure rooms is a huge skill reduction.
Yeah, they don't want you to use the treasure rooms.
Hmm. Well, they don't. It's not that they don't want you to. They just penalized you for doing so.
Hmm. You probably make it back... By collecting the objects in them.
If you complete
a slight net loss.
Yeah, it's 1480 points of lost skill, which isn't a lot really. I think you only need 10,000 to get each level, but it's this invisible stat. How are you supposed to know?
The experience is kind of invisible too. Like if you go to the pause screen, you can do it. Does it show on the screen though?
It's just your score.
But does it show on the screen?
Yeah, your score, your current score.
Really?
For that level, yeah. Oh. It doesn't tell you what your total score is until you finish the level, I think. But
it's on the screen.
It's on
all the
pause screen. Yeah.
No, not on the pause screen. I'm saying is.
Oh, it's and it's on the pause screen.
Okay, so that's weird.
Yeah.
Like, you're getting experience points. They don't let you level until you sleep, like in Oblivion. Between the two.
Yeah, levels.
and it also doesn't show you like that. Just seems like
it's not clear when or why you're going to level up, power up.
And it's like you can't watch it change. Like, to know how much experience
you'd have to
a thing
pause
is
it
worth,
between
you'd have
two
to pause
things.
Between
yeah.
every pair of actions, and it's like
definitely some weird choices. I'm not going to argue with that at all.
I kind of want to try the Game Boy sequel to it that I had no idea existed.
Oh, is there a sequel?
Yeah, Kid Icarus sequel? Of Myths and Monsters.
Huh.
Which I was unaware of the existence of until earlier today.
Yeah, same here.
I don't even know.
I mean, I wonder if it was an improvement over Metroid the same way that Metroid 2 is an improvement over Metroid. If it was an improvement over the first one, the
it
same way that Metroid 2...
over Metroid the same way that Metroid 2 is an improvement over the first Kid Icarus.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it was a horrible, shitty waste of money the way that Game Boy Castlevania game was. and when in fact what you should have done was bought two copies of Revenge of the Gator Pinball. Man, that was a good game.
I don't think I ever played that.
Played a ton of. Game Boy games that I actually...
You like anything with alligators in them.
I do. And as long as it has alligators and both kinds of dwarves, it's a game for me. I had... What did I have for the Game Boy? I had Super Mario Land, which I just played... I would just pick up and play through because I liked the end title screen music. So then I would just leave the Game Boy on listening to the title screen music. Pretty
Has
good.
Any other Mario game used that Super Ball power?
I don't know. It was weird, though.
Yeah.
That struck me as like, they just couldn't figure out how to make the fireball work. They ran out of memory. They ran out of variables. And I had Quicks.
Yeah.
Or Kicks. And I had Revenge
the
of the
cereal?
Gator and Castlevania, The Adventure. And
Gargoyle's Quest was really awesome.
I did not have I eventually borrowed Gargoyle's Quest.
Did you have Kirby Pinball?
Nope.
Kirby Pinball was awesome. The Pokemon Pinball was really good, too.
The only other handheld pinball game I had was the 3D or the DS Metroid Pinball.
Oh, that was really good.
Which was
pretty
good. I like a pinball game.
Yeah.
A lot of different pinball games for that system.
Yeah.
There were a lot of pinball games I played on my computer as well back
in
the day.
Like Sexbot Pinball.
I don't remember Sexbot Pinball.
Pinballs.
And
larger pin.
What's our assignment for next week, Zach?
Spelunky. We're going to play Spelunky.
All right.
Because it's good for us. It's like taking our medicine. It's hard, but...
It is a Windows game. but the code has been released to the open source.
The code.
And so it has been ported to Mac. So if you do a Google search for Spelunky Mac, you can find an unofficial fan port to Mac. It's supposed to be coming out for Xbox, but that was announced in 2009, so I don't know if that's ever happening.
He's definitely still talking about it. Okay. I started following him on Twitter.
Apparently it won some accolades at the Independent Game Festival.
Like in 2011? Or this year?
I think it might have been this year. Yeah, it was this year, which it seems weird that it'd be 3 years later that he'd entered into the competition.
Maybe it took people a while to fully realize what's so amazing about it. I was looking at the original Game Maker source the other day because he released that. Like, it's just there for you to download.
Yep.
And it was pretty instructive. It's very clean code.
What does that mean?
I don't know. The dude's just like really fastidious. It's really well commented and really well organized. And it's
Derek.
I guess if I was going to release my code publicly, I would go through and clean it up and add a lot of comments. Yeah.
I think a lot of people open source stuff that is just inscrutable. So
I mostly make comments when I think of a funny joke. or when I want to say, what the fuck is this bullshit? How does this fucking bullshit even work?
Don't you also put a bunch of like ridiculous variable names in for things too?
No, every once in a while. Like, I mean, that's a good way.
Pool and pool.
Yeah. I ran into. See, that's the thing. If you name them something reasonable, you stand the chance of
class.
You stand a chance of stomping on. Well, if you are an idiot who uses register globals in PHP, which is super insecure and also makes this kind of thing possible, and believe me, I am that kind of idiot. Then you just give flapdang noodle plop was a thing that I did because that was a word that I was certain would never appear in an item description. So I left a note in there: never use this word in an item description.
What happens if you do?
I think it will make all of us think that that item is trying to get their attention.
Yeah.
What?
That's great. Now I want to start doing that.
That's a terrible idea. Code. Code's pretty good.
Spelunky.
That's the segment. Spelunky. Everybody play Spelunky. And fuck Kid Icarus.
I didn't think it was that bad.
Yeah. I mean, it was better in my memory. I'm worried. Do you ever worry that we're ruining things by going back to them?
No. I mean, I never finished Kid Icarus as a kid. I played through it a couple of years ago on an emulator.
It wasn't until you became a man that you finished Man Icarus.
It was not until I had save states. I mean, that's the thing. As I cheated my way through it this time, right? Like saving and restoring a bunch.
Mm-hmm. So you played a perfect game. Did you get the best ending?
I did.
What do you turn into instead of a spec nose?
You become instead of a kid, you become a man angel.
Okay.
And then you get a kiss from the princess or something.
Oh, that princess that we didn't tell you about.
And then there's a bunch of like little cherubs that fly around and some confetti falls from the sky and like these pillars appear. It's actually pretty grandiose. Hmm. And then the credits roll. That's it.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Are there any funny jokes in the credits, like in Castlevania?
I did not read them super closely, but I did not see any funny jokes.
All right. No funny jokes. Hey, how about some listeners' mail?
Okay.
Torn Wolf writes, I was listening to the last episode, and Zach was talking about how his Xbox Live account got hacked and used to buy FIFA DLC. This is really common, and is probably not anything to do with having a weak password, because the system ultimately relies on Microsoft's unified login system, and every time there's a ridiculous exploit, like the recently patched Hotmail exploit, that let you reset anyone's password without needing to know any of their information,
Jesus.
Then your Xbox Live account gets exploited too. Fucking Hotmail is
such a source of problems.
Ah, boy.
Hotmail and Yahoo.
I don't even want to talk about the ways in which Hotmail causes these fucked up problems for us.
Everybody else,
sure. And undoubtedly other people too.
Yeah.
But really, we're the important thing.
Yeah.
Michael Bernstein writes, after months of wishing you'd discussed Pushmo for the 3DS, I have another game to ask you about as well. Quetzal's Corridors.
I played that for a few minutes. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah. He says both of them are interesting puzzle games. I hope you'll at least check them out.
Pushmo and Quetzal's Corridors?
Quetzal's Corridors.
Yeah. Huh.
It is basically...
Sokoban?
No, imagine you've got, okay, imagine you've got a three-dimensional Tetris block.
Yeah.
And it's Aztec themed, so it's all carved like a square snake or whatever.
Yeah.
And you're flying through space towards a wall.
Yeah.
And the wall has a hole in it that you can fit through on one of your axes.
Yeah. So you have to figure out how to rotate that way.
Yeah, so you have to rotate in before you hit the wall and slip through.
And you do this over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And your snake is configured in like a complicated way.
Yeah.
And as the game progresses, you get longer and longer.
I did not play it very far, but I think as the game progresses, and 'cause part of it is that there will occasionally be a heart or two in one of the spaces of the slots. So if you're turned in the correct configuration to fill that part of the slot, then you pick up the heart. And then I think probably every so many hearts, you unlock a different character who would be a different shape.
I see.
So they probably get more complicated as you go.
Okay. It's like Weltris, but different.
Yeah. It's very pretty.
Wordtris.
I don't know if I did.
It was like, I think it was on the Super Nintendo. I think Josh rented it once when we were in high school. There was also Hattris.
I remember that one. That was weird.
Yeah, I remember that being kind of dumb.
How did that work?
There were hats. You put them on a dude, I guess. I don't know. Let's see. M. Steeler writes, the recent trilogy of extra credits videos on Western versus JRPGs is an interesting view, as are the large part of extra credits bids. And he's right about that. Of the two archetypes, which do you guys, as a whole or as parts, prefer, Western or Japanese RPGs? The main distinction from the videos is that Western RPGs are more about a blank slate character and their evolution, while JRPGs have set characters but a broad storyline. The line has become somewhat fuzzy over the years, though. I am fucking Western all the way. I could not be less interested in like a modern Final Fantasy.
I mean, game. I never had like a gaming PC. Most of my gaming had been console, so I've played more JRPGs. I'm not sure if I would say I prefer them over Western ones. I like both. I think probably the games that I've really liked have been more likely to be Western ones than JRPGs.
I mean, I liked Chrono Trigger.
Yeah.
Quite a bit.
Chrono Trigger is really good.
Oh, we got to do that as an assignment one of these days.
Yeah. I've never played the Final Fantasy games, so I don't have, like, I feel like those probably would have been okay for me, except for the fucking combat. God damn it.
Yeah.
But I think
Shadowheart's Covenant is really awesome.
I probably like the Western.
Was that the one with the crazy gay, guy that you find gay porn for?
Yeah.
What is
and the
Kingdom
combat
Hearts?
Was on like a spinner.
Is Kingdom Hearts a Western or a?
It's not really an RPG, right? Like it's
it's action RPG.
Yeah, it's like a 400 hours of cutscenes, and then one time you get to swing a sword at Tron.
So then, what are we distinguishing between then? Like, what are some examples of JRPGs versus...
I would say JRPG is like a Final Fantasy or a Persona game, and then a Western would be like Baldur's Gate.
Or Skyrim.
Yeah.
Skyrim's
Or Mass Effect. Although Mass Effect is more Japanese-y.
Mass Effect, yeah, and it's also more shootery.
They characterize it. I think that Mass Effect would be what the first thing that a lot of people would mention if you said Western RPG.
Really?
But like,
I would think Baldur's Gate or Planescape.
You think?
Yeah.
Or a Fallout.
Yeah.
Huh. Or Fallout 2, or Fallout 2.5, Fallout Brotherhood of Steel,
Wasteland,
Fallout 2.5,
Wasteland Returns,
flashback to
Shadowrun
Wasteland,
Returns,
and in Wasteland you find a computer on which you play Pong. Wasteland Returns,
Fallout 2,
what? Wasteland New Vegas,
yeah,
Baldur's Vegas, Gates McFadden's Baldur's Gates.
Baldur's Gates McFadden's.
Yeah, Western, I think. I think I am a little bit of an oddity in the class of people who care a lot about video games, in that I just don't care about Japanese video games at all. I mean, I know that we just played a bunch of Kid Icarus, which is a Japanese video game, and like Legend of Zelda is a Japanese
Mario,
video game, or
Castlevania,
but like,
wasn't Metroid Japanese?
Yes, yeah. I mean, all of the Nintendo stuff was up to a certain point, but like, I don't have any interest in going and getting Nintendo games that were only released in Japan. You know, I don't have any interest in, like, learning Japanese to be able to play. Like, there's, like, just a lot of the video game podcasts that I've listened to, it's like, okay, the people on this podcast have spent a ton of time in Japan, like, and they're, like, know a lot about,
the culture, and I've just sort of never been, you know, as a xenophobe, I've never been interested in any other cultures.
You don't even like your own culture. You don't like bacterial cultures.
That's true. That's true. I like a throat culture every once in a while.
You
unwind you're after like a hard day.
On the fence about yogurt, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, the fence is between two different flavors of yogurt.
Sure, but you're still on that fence.
Well, yeah, because otherwise I'm going to get yogurt on the carpet. Oh, man. Yeah, I don't...
We should really...
learn Japanese.
Well, I was going to say, end this podcast so I can go play some more Risk Legacy.
Do you want to play another game?
Sure.
All right.
I'm down.
Yeah, we're going to. Kevin, if somebody wanted to ask us a question or prompt some racism, how would they do that?
Well, they could tweet at us via the Twitters at VG Hot Dog. They could email us via the mail-ees at... What is that? vghotdog@gmail.com? Yeah.
Do you want me to do this?
No, I'm just scatting.
You have one job.
I could make it the same every time, but then it's just gonna people are just gonna like tune out. If I like make it unusual and they're like, What did he just say? Then they'll like it'll get ingrained and then they'll be like they'll be at their computers and they'll be like, I need to do some work, but I can't get that freaking vghotdog@gmail.com out of my head. I better email them and then I can get on with my work.
Okay.
That's my strategy, man.
All right. If you say so.
And then you can check out our website and our forums, videogameshotdog.com.
Yeah, I changed the videogameshotdog.com to show the assignment and link to it for the current episode.
Nice.
Which, that'll get two or three more dudes playing the assignment. Come to the forums. Talk to the dudes about the assignment.
Yep.
There's ladies there, too, I guess.
People are bringing up other games, talking about other stuff, too.
Yeah, I've actually started finding out about a bunch of stuff just from
our forums.
From our dudes checking things out and telling them us.
Yep. It's pretty nice.
Yeah. All right. Well,
we've got our own little video games army out there.
All right. Are you guys ready to get your shit rocked by Imperial Balkania?
You don't necessarily get to choose it, pal.
Yeah, maybe I don't. All right. Good night, everybody.
Have a great weekend, everyone.
See ya.